with Brent Terhune. Take the load off and listen soon. We're gonna have a real good time for you. The Field Trip Podcast.
This is the Field Trip Podcast. My name is Brent Terhune. Joining me for the first time on the program is Nick Griffin. Nick, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. This is cool.
It's good to talk to you. People would know you. I know you from the Bob and Tom Show, but you've been in comedy forever. You just had a new special out. Can you tell me about the special and where to find it?
Yeah, you can go to YouTube. Just it's called Nick Griffin. Absolutely wonderful. It's been up there for about 2 weeks, and check it out. Please watch it and let me know in comment and let me know what you guys think.
Yeah, it's free. I love a good YouTube special. Like, it's like so easy to access YouTube. And if I could spoil one of the punchlines here, Nick, I can't pretend to have seen the whole special. I was just going through your Instagram before we turned on the mics here. But you said people are like foreign films. You think you want to see them, and then 20 minutes later, you're like, oh, this fucking sucks. Made me laugh, and I couldn't relate more to that. But you have the new special out. I want to talk about all of them in great detail, your late night appearances, but for you, the listener, as you saw in the title, this is another confessions episode. And if it's your first time joining the show, I go to twitter.com, still going to call Twitter. There's an account there called Fesshole, where people tweet in their anonymous confessions, and Nick and I are going to give some of these a perusal and give our reactions to it. And this is a UK based account, so sometimes there's going to be some language where they're like, I was on the tube or taking a poo on the loo. So we will adjust our language accordingly. But let's jump into one of these, Nick. I've not pre-screened these, so some of these will make no sense. And if that's the case, we'll jump to the next one.
Right.
But this one says, I'm friends with a pair of identical twins, both married. One drunken night, I hooked up with one of them. For the life of me, I don't know which one it was, and I don't want to ask for fear as if it's the other one, and I get them in trouble. So, do you know any twins, Nick?
I do know some twins. There's a comedy set of twins called the Sklar Brothers that have probably been doing stand-up about as long as I have, and very funny. But we did not have that same situation happen.
And with the Sklars too, one of them is bearded, and then the other has glasses, right? Do you think that's a choice?
I think that's right.
Yeah, it's I do. I think they're very funny, and I've never met these guys before, but I imagine it's. I wonder if they get tired of being in a duo. You think, because they're marketed as the Sklar Brothers. But I wonder if Randy would like to go solo for a minute. You think, or the other one?
I don't know. I know they used to. I want to think, and maybe I'm just imagining this, that when they did their show, like some, I want to think that one went up and did 10, and then the other one came on and did 10, and then they did. Maybe that's not true, but I would imagine, you know, the whole twins thing is sort of eerie and creepy, and I would imagine there's probably some weird detachment worries or fears that would come with not being working with your twin. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, from birth, literally, and then your parents, maybe if you had the parents that dress you the same,
sure,
or you're in the same sports or the same activities, where you feel like you're two people, but also the same person at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
And probably the most iconic set of twins. What would you say is the most iconic set of twins?
Doubleman twins.
Maybe the double. What I was thinking is the Shining twins. But
oh, of course. Yeah. Those girls. Yeah. They are lovely. And the guy, rewatched it obviously in the last year or so. And I was just talking to someone for some reason on my feed, I got an article about Shelley Duvall, and it was the article was basically about how mean Stanley Kubrick was to Shelley Duvall, who played, you know, as you know, who played
Wendy Torrance,
yeah.
Yeah.
And how it may or may not have helped her or hastened her nervous breakdown that she apparently is still suffering. Or did she pass?
No, she's still alive as far as I know. And I think she, because I was excited to talk to you, Nick, because I know you like horror movies. I do too. So I was excited to talk to about horror movies with you, but I think she just shot something for like an independent horror film. So I don't know what that project is, but I know you're a big horror guy. Is The Shining, would you say, one of your favorites, or what's one of your favorites, your go-to horror movies, you think?
Well, I mean, there's a handful of the typical ones, Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
What else do I like? I can't think.
I was just looking at your podcast, too.
Obviously. Yeah, The Exorcist. Actually, we just stopped doing the podcast a couple weeks ago, but some of the other ones I really like are The Dead Zone. I like Shaun of the Dead. I liked Antlers recently. I like Talk to Me recently. Mm-hmm. One other one. Yeah, just a numerous ones.
Yeah. What is about Shaun of the Dead you like? Because that's one of my favorites, but that's a great blend of horror and comedy, which I thought
they pulled it off very well in terms of I find that genre horror comedy hard to pull off. They did it in spades. I don't know, I like the idea of a friendship. Those two guys I thought were just really nailed it. I had a Nintendo when I first moved to Los Angeles in I think 1995, and a guy down the hall used to come down and we used to drink beer and smoke cigarettes and just stay up all night and laughing and insulting each other. So that really hit home for me, and I just thought it was a cool story and self-contained. Yeah. And obviously the writing is super super tight.
The writing is great, and there were certain references in that movie that I didn't get for a long time, but then you see enough zombie movies and you come back to it, and it's, you didn't need to know those references, but what I love a good reference when you don't need to know it. It could either be something in the movie, or once you get the reference and you can come back and be like, oh, that's what that's from. I think those are the best references in comedy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just don't think there was a bad minute in that movie. I just worked top to bottom.
Yeah. Let's jump to another confession here. My ex-boyfriend never washed his hands after taking a dump. He informed me that he only washes his hands if either his fingers or palm of his hands smell like shit. Broke up literally days after this. I still have images in my head of him smelling his shit-covered hands.
I think that's an old George Carlin bit where he says he doesn't wash his hands unless he's got shit on him. And
maybe this was his girlfriend.
I must say I kind of find that gross that he didn't wash his hands. And she made the right choice. She could move on to someone who's even creepier now.
I love a you go to a restroom at a restaurant and it says employees must wash hands. I think we should just take that sign down and put everyone should wash their hands.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you.
Totally. With COVID and everything, that was, it was exacerbated. We are all washing our hands all the time, hopefully. But there's a right amount of, if I think it's like bathroom, no matter what you're doing, just wash your hands, come out and we'll all be better off. Right. Like, especially if you're with, it's like taking a shit. It doesn't matter if you think you got something on your hands or not, just wash your hands because you're putting it right around your butthole.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. I grew up with six brothers and sisters, so there was a lot of gross, you know, bathroom activity happening when you're surrounded by that many people. And so I get some of the, you know, laziness of it, but once you hit adulthood, you really got to pull it together. And
yeah. So how many people are in your house, and how many bathrooms when you're a kid?
Let me think. One, two, there are about three bathrooms and, you know, nine people.
Oh, that's so many still.
So many people. Yeah. It's crazy. I went to Catholic school, and I grew up with, you know, most people that were in our Catholic school had three, four, five kids. So it wasn't that unusual until I got to the coasts, and everyone had one kid or two kids, and they all thought we were insane for having seven kids. So, yeah.
I was raised Catholic, and it was just a brother and I, so it was two. So I remember there'd be the gaggle of kids coming into church, and there's always like with redheads, which, you know, which I am one, either you get like one redhead or you get eight redheads. And you just get like a gaggle of redheads coming into the church. And right. I imagine people thought my family was weird for only having two kids. And where did you fall in the birth order, Nick?
I had an older brother and an older sister, then two of each younger.
Okay. Because there were stats that show like the youngest is usually the comedian entertainer type. So I always find right. it, I'm the youngest, but I think it's interesting to see where people fall in line. And where are you from originally?
Kansas. I grew up in Kansas, in the suburbs of Kansas City.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any intention of ever going back to Kansas? Because you live in New York now, right?
Yeah, I've lived in New York for about 15 years. And yeah, I think eventually you got to go back home, just because New York is so punishingly expensive. And if you're not, you know, I'm not going to be chasing comedy as hard as I was when I was 33 or 23 or whatever. So mm-hmm. I imagine when I hit a few years from now, I'll probably, you know, think about going back. Yeah, moving back.
Are most of your family still in Kansas?
No, they're all spread out. I got family in Florida. I got family in Nashville. I got two brothers in L.A. and Minneapolis, everywhere. Yeah.
Now, is comedian the most eccentric job out of your siblings?
Well, if you count unemployed eccentric, that's also.
Sometimes it is. Depends on what you're doing with your unemployment.
Right, with your free time?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's the weirdest job of everyone, definitely. Yeah.
Now, probably by this point in your life, everybody that you know doesn't necessarily give a shit that you do comedy. You do it long enough, then you're like, oh, that's Nick. He's doing another show. It's whatever, right? Like, people don't care.
Absolutely. And you know, early on they want to come out to every show, and after a while they're like, oh, you kind of do the same show a lot. And then
yeah, you write funny new material. Try it.
Yeah, brother. Exactly. Find out how easy it is. Everyone knows I do stand up, and every now and then, like, I'll play a city that my oldest brother will want to just come and hang out and have beers at. So he'll drive down to, you know, Nashville or Springfield, Missouri or something, and see me. But for the most part, everyone, it's just like being a truck driver. Yeah, Nick's out driving a truck today.
Yeah, yeah. My friend Stuart Huff, who's been on the show previously, he's like, I'm a trucker
Love
with jokes.
Stuart Huff.
Stuart's one of my favorites.
Stuart's probably done more gigs than I have.
He, more gigs and probably been hated more with the type of material he does and some of the places he does it.
Yeah.
Now, your family, they probably tune in when you do a late night spot, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, they were very I guess the word is disappointed when I went into comedy. And it wasn't until probably 18 years in when I got on Letterman that they, you know, they kind of could, you know, have a sigh of relief that, okay, he's kind of gotten somewhere with it.
Yeah.
I think up until that point, they were very worried, and they should be worried, because I was skating by, barely skating by.
Yeah, the TV credit is some form of validity, and then it's what's next after that, I'm sure.
Right, yeah, and you get paid a little bit more, not a lot more when you get a TV credit, but, or at least not back then. I don't think you get paid any more now when you get a TV credit, but yeah, back then it was a little bit of a bump in pay, mm-hmm. and yeah.
Now, how many late night appearances have you done?
I think I've done right on 20. I think I've done 11 Lettermans, 4 Conans, and 4 or 5, and then maybe 5 I did late shows.
Mm-hmm. Now that's a lot, right? Like that's a lot of appearances, I would say.
Well, when I got the first Letterman, before I actually did it, I worked with Jake Johansson, who had done, I think literally, and this sounds like it's a joke, but it's not. I think he did 44 Lettermans.
Yeah, I was going to say 70 something. And I don't know. I don't
and
know.
It may
if that's
be 70.
Number.
It may yeah. be 77. It might be if you count the late night and the late show.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, I asked him for advice, and he said, after you do the show, they're going to come up and congratulate you and tell them, thank you, I want to do the show again, and just plant that seed. And so I really wanted to convey the idea that I love doing the show and I wanted to do a lot of them. Because I always like writing jokes. I write, I would say, 90% clean jokes. And that's kind of how I grew up on comedy. I watched Letterman and Conan and The Tonight Show, and I would see these guys doing clean comedy, and I don't even want to call it clean, but just late night comedy. And that's kind of how I modeled my act after, really, to be honest with you.
I was going to say, watching you and having you watch you over the years, hearing you on the Bob and Tom show and seeing you live, and then seeing the Conans and the Lettermans and stuff, it's, there are certain guys, and you're one of them, I think, that essentially, I don't know that you consciously write for late night, but your act is just, you could take it and move it over to late night without very many changes, probably, right?
Yeah, that was kind of the idea. And obviously you had to shape it a little and, you know, have an opening and an ending. But the bulk of the act was easily placed in a late night venue situation.
Now, when you approach late night, let's say you did a few for Letter, you're on your third or fourth Letterman. Do you, at that point, are you say, do you come up with a set for 5 minutes and you say, here's what I'd like to do? Or are they kind of picking from what they know that you do? Or what is that process like?
Yeah, it was a matter of sending 5 minutes. They basically have you send the set and they go, you could do these 6 jokes, but we're going to need 4 more that aren't the ones you sent us. And then you send them 5 more and they pick 2. And it's sometimes it's a, you know, a 3 or 4 month process, depending on how eager they are to get you back on the show. But after a while, you kind of get a feeling for what they do and don't want, and mm-hmm. and in tone and even in topic. And I think once I got probably past 4 or 5 Lettermans, I started to kind of understand really what they needed.
Yeah. Did you notice big difference between Letterman and Conan and the other late night shows? Like, that you had to switch your tone or switch what they wanted?
I think Letterman was a little more traditional, or I don't, that's not the right word, but let me put it this way. I think Conan's guy, his name was J.P. Buck. I think you and I talked about him one time.
Yeah, you gave me notes, and I haven't been on yet, so it didn't work. It was not your fault. It was for lack of trying.
No. JP said, you know, just be loose. Once he had okayed the set, he said, just go with it. Whatever happens, if you feel, you know, you want to try different jokes somewhere in there, feel free. Just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Conan's was much more, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but much more available than Letterman. He kind of hung out and talked to you after your set and was very warm and friendly. And Letterman was very warm too, but he, I think, was on a tighter schedule and he was moving it along at a quicker pace. But yeah.
Do you have a set that has stood out to you of all the ones you've done?
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't really remember. I know the first one they really loved, and that kind of that was going to lock me in for at least two more. Like, they were going to let me. I have a feeling that even if my second one had gone okay, I wouldn't have gotten a chance to do a third, because that first one went so well, and it should have gone well too, because I was 100 years old by the time I did that, and I had, you know, probably 20 jokes that could have gone on late night. And so I had a nice bunch to pick from.
Yeah. And to put it in context for people that aren't comics or aren't tuned into late night type stuff, like, forever, that could make your career. You get called over to the couch with Johnny Carson, and now you have a sitcom. That wasn't always the case, but for a lot of people that was it. And for comics in general, It is a badge of honor for you, Nick, where your family's like, oh, it's real, even though you've been doing it for 18 years. And it's also, who doesn't want, it's like a thing of respect. Now that you could tell your peers, hey, I did something, and it's like a bump in respect. Maybe not necessarily pay anymore, but it's people realize you're legitimate, right?
Yeah, and I also think, like you said, that, you know, you're a comic. We were talking about Stuart Huff earlier, and I've done a lot of the same less than great gigs that Stuart's done. And a lot of times you're going, what am I doing in this business? And is this show business, or is this just nonsense?
Check at the end of the show.
Right. And then you get to go to a Letterman, and they, you know, press and steam your suit, and they have cookies in your dressing room, and everyone kisses your ass, and all of a sudden and there's cameras around, all of a sudden you feel like you're in show business for 5 minutes. And so that was fun. You know, I'm a road comic. I mean, for lack of a better term, I'm a guy who's on the road probably 30-35 weeks a year for the last 35 years. So it was a kick in the pants.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a milestone. Yeah, it's. I just think, you know, you said goals, and I don't know many comics whose goal is not some form of late night appearance, whether it be, you know, on a talk show or something. Just give me some legitimacy, you know. So yeah. You've been doing stand up for 35 years,
maybe 36, but at least 35. Yeah.
Do you like it as much now as when you've, like, year 10?
Yeah, I think so, because I feel like I spent a lot of years wondering, am I funny? And I think in the last few years, you know, you kind of, you know, you make peace with the idea, okay, I'm funny and I'm doing well, and I how good can I get? And how much more can I relax on stage and not panic and not worry that somebody's going to not like me? So a lot of that stuff falls away, and you kind of are able to focus, maybe, or at least I've been able to focus a little more in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And so definitely I love doing stand up. I write every day, and yeah, I'm still plugging along.
Did you, or do you still currently have aspirations to do not only stand up, but to act, or to do anything else? Cause it's that Mitch Hedberg joke, is you're funny, write me a script. Right. It's like, you know, you're a chef, can you farm? Do you have other aspirations in comedy? Or are you like, I just want to do stand up?
Well, after that first Letterman's company signed me to a development deal, and we went through the whole process, and it didn't end up shooting a pilot or anything. And I went through that a couple times, but I've kind of given up the TV thing. I've been writing screenplays forever, and I could probably tell you some interesting stories about some horror screenplays that I've written, but that's kind of where my focus is now, is writing horror screenplays and getting better at stand up. Yeah.
Let's jump to another confession, then we'll come back and talk about something else I want to talk about. When we bought our house in 2020, we found an old Tesco bag packed full of soft porn magazines from the 90s in the cellar. I will often take a few ripped out pages when I go for an evening jog and put them in roadside hedges. I feel like I'm reviving a lost tradition. Finding porn. Do you ever find porn in the woods, Nick?
I have found porn in the woods. There used to be, or there still is, a small creek that ran about two blocks from my house, just a tiny little thing in a wooded area. And I would find porn magazines down there, not infrequently.
Was it like porn? Because the stuff I always found was like, they'd be like alternative magazines. Here in Indianapolis, the one was called Nouveau. You probably did interviews with Nouveau, but it was like not Indianapolis Star, but it was like, here's like what's going on in the entertainment side of, and like, to me, the porn, it wasn't real porn, but it was like the back pages. It'd be like fantasy massages, and it'd be like half nude women. And when you're a kid, half nude is as good as nude. You know, so I would always find those, but mine was never penetration. Was your what kind of stuff were you finding in the woods?
No, it was never penetration, but it was like naked, like maybe Genesis magazine or Wii.
Mm-hmm.
We used to, when we were kids, hung out with two other virgins when we were like, I don't know, whenever we were. And one of us figured out in the telephone book that there was a section for escorts.
Okay.
And we used to call escorts and ask for stuff and giggle and then hang up real fast just to show you how edgy we were.
I wonder how many, like, if it was 1 out of 10 phone calls to the escort place was you know, some kid calling up half nervous to even talk to anybody on the phone, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, we were just, and you know, it's obviously a woman who was in dire need of money. She could care less. And, you know, she was, is this real? Is this going to happen?
And just
little preteen giggles from the other end of the phone.
Did you ever call one of those, like line, the phone sex lines? I never called one of those because it was more out of fear of, oh, this is $8 a minute. But I have still seen, I don't have regular TV, but when I do, I'm always amazed that they're still running those commercials of
unbelievable, right?
Yeah. Cause you're in as many hotel rooms, or far more hotel rooms than I am, where you just turn on regular TV and I can't believe that certain commercials are still running. Like, this is still a need for people.
Either. Yeah, this whole talk sex line, I can't believe it's still, there's still some guy out there going, come on, we're gonna be the one sex line that's gonna make it.
Yeah. And you ever know who's on the other end of the phone? It could be somebody that looks like me, you know?
Yeah.
Who wants to talk to me besides you? another confession. When I go into the office in the morning, I put my ID pass lanyard around my neck. I like to think I'm awarding myself a little medal for turning up for another day of boring work. That's a boring confession, but I do like, if I do a festival or anywhere where they give me a lanyard, I do like to wear that lanyard. I can relate to this one where I'm like, I feel a little VIP, even though if it's for a bullshit reason, you know?
I agree 100%. And I also agree with that guy. Like, one of the reasons I went into comedy, one of the reasons I went into comedy, as I remember in all my jobs when I was younger, no matter how easy or how hard it was, within 2 days of starting that job, I would be like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened to me ever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just not even be able to comprehend doing this for longer than a month or something. Like, it just, it couldn't, every time I showed up, it was like, they should be giving me $10 million for showing up today, even though I'm giving half effort.
Yeah.
And a bad attitude. Yeah. I remember thinking, there's no way I'm going to be able to do 9 to 5. I really remember that. Yeah. Well,
then you meet somebody that's like an alcoholic or has a drug problem or has extreme depression, and you're like, wonder why. And then you like work the same job that they do, and you're like, this makes sense.
Right. This is the drug addict job. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I you know, you're asking if I still like stand up, and I feel so grateful that on a regular basis I get excited about my work, and I feel challenged by my work, and I feel like, geez, I still want to get better by my work. And you can imagine how many people don't get to feel that, you know, at all, ever.
Yeah, they have the autopilot job where they go in and then they leave when it's time to leave. What jobs did you used to have, Nick?
Oh, geez, they were just very basic, especially when I moved to New York. I worked in a bagel shop. I worked at the front desk of a fitness center. I just literally was a file clerk at 3 or 4 different jobs. I stuffed envelopes.
Mm-hmm.
I cleaned houses as a kind of a maid type thing. Just really dead-end jobs where you could kind of, you know, file clerk and a maid, you pretty much are left alone. So you can put on your Walkman mm-hmm. and just go clean and not even have to deal with the outside world, which was a big plus.
That I worked in the kitchen of a hospital, and I love working in the dish room because it was, you go to different floors by yourself, and you could put it on headphones certain times. And part of that job was me thinking about how do I get out of this job? How do I get good at comedy?
So right.
Then I don't have to come back to this job. Even though if I was given a list of jobs, I maybe would go back to the dish room job because it's a think job. I can think about other things. I don't really, it's not a brain power job, you know?
Yeah. And I just couldn't deal with the 9 to 5. I needed to, and a lot of that's, it's not that the 9 to 5 sucks, although I'm sure on some level it does. I just, my brain didn't work that way. And
What's the best you've ever been treated for a show?
Oh gosh.
We talked about with the lanyard and the VIP experience, but have you ever like walked into a show and been like, I'm getting away with something here?
Well, I must say, having grown up watching Letterman as a youngster, like 1983, 84, 85, when I was just still in high school and awkward and lonely and pissed off and
mm-hmm.
thinking, oh, geez, maybe I could somehow figure out how to tell a joke kind of thing. So when I first did Letterman and they meet you at the door and they take you up your room and they're, oh, we're so glad to have you. And there's, you know, a plate of cookies and fruit and, oh, you're going to do great. And just all that stuff. And coded the same way, just kiss your ass.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the property, you just get your ass kissed. And again, it's fun because you're getting this incredible show business kind of stroking. And then you go out and do your best, the best 5 jokes you've written in the last year, best 10 jokes you've written in the last year. And it kind of feels like a fair trade off, you know,
mm-hmm.
and maybe I do deserve all that stroking because I just wrote some good jokes.
What have you, you've been backstage so many times. Have you ever run into like a celebrity or somebody that you were starstruck by?
I mean, everyone that I worked with, they always put you on Letterman. They always put you with, I think it was a Friday show. So a lot of times it would be like Jack Hanna,
the animal guy
or some other kind of lower level person. But I saw Amy Poehler there. That was very cool.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, Billy Corgan from
Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, so Donald Trump was a guest right before me. So that was weird.
yeah. Did you have any interaction or anything with him?
He shook my
hand
and said, "You're going to do great." And that was about it.
They do kiss your ass on whatever show that was.
We're going to bring the future president of the United States in to say hello to you.
That is what a weird thing where you could say I met a president, and then to find out it was Donald Trump, for you're like, this shouldn't count. You know, this is, oh, cool. You met a president. Which one? The not great one.
It's not important.
Yeah. Yeah. conversely, what's some of the worst setups for shows or worst shows you've ever done?
Are you talking about just even regular stand-up shows?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. I mean, I've gone on without a mic, without a stage.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a place in Rulo, RULO, Nebraska. It was a bar stop for truckers along the highway.
Okay.
And they had a show there, and I just absolutely chewed it beyond. It wasn't even chewing. It was like, I don't even know what it was. It was just awful.
Yeah.
It was God saying, maybe this isn't what you should be doing.
Now, what are you, were you headlining that one?
No, I was, thank God, I was only doing like 10 minutes.
Yeah. I've done those gigs where, you know, I'll headline, I'll do whatever spot on the show if I'm open, you know, but at some of those shows you show up and it's such a shitty circumstance that you're like, thank God I'm not headlining.
Right,
I only have
right.
to do this amount of time on the show as opposed to be the main guy.
And then you have all the respect in the world for some of those guys who play those gigs and somehow maybe not pull it off, but survive and walk away with some level of dignity.
Yeah. I call them like the soul sucker gigs.
Yeah.
Or their money gigs. Like creatively, I'm not going to probably achieve anything this week. I'm not going to grow artistically. I'm only going to get by so they can give me the money at the end of the week. And I hate to look at it that way, but some weeks that's just what it is.
That's all you can do. That's the best you can do sometimes.
Yeah. Let's do another confession. Dentist here. My Friday brains fried. By Friday, my brains are fried. I wouldn't want to see me on a Friday. Book yourself earlier in the week. So this, yeah.
Good to know.
Unless it's a major thing, don't go to the dentist on a, so would that be like second show Saturday for you? I feel like by the end of the week at a club, I'm pretty tired. Would you say you're that way?
Yeah, I would say second show Friday, I'm done.
And you have prime time the next night.
Yeah, you got it's all takes all your professionalism to show up and be, you know, present for your last two shows, even if it's your last two shows. So I hate going to the dentist. I've had some major dental surgery lately. I can't imagine, like, as bad as it hurts to get my teeth fixed, I can't imagine that it could be, you know what I mean? Like your teeth. Getting your teeth worked on is horrible. How could it be worse? I guess just without some sort of
a guy that's not present. He's in your mouth.
Yeah.
But he's also at the lake already, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I, you know, you always hear people say, I hate the dentist, and nobody ever says, I love the dentist. We're all in the same boat. It's like, I'm tired. We're all tired, man. You know?
Yeah. But, that's a great joke. Yeah.
I hate the dentist, and I had a tooth pulled, a wisdom tooth pulled within the last year. And this dude went in, I don't have dental insurance. So I just went to whatever the place was by my house, And I showed up and the dude numbed me and pulled it in like 20 minutes. He's like, you're good. I was like, really? I'm good. Like, I was so surprised. And then they charged me. I was like, God damn.
Yeah.
That's like a corporate stand up money.
Absolutely.
But you had to work. You had to go to school for 8 years to be able to do that, you know?
Right.
Went on a blind date with somebody I had one night. I had a one night stand with as a student. She completely forgot. And I'm glad as we're now engaged. She would never have accepted if she remembered me because I took a 30 euro. So I don't know, $30 dues out of her purse for a taxi as I was broke and never called her. So thank God for short-term memory or long-term memory loss. I don't know.
That really sounds like something a guy would do.
Yeah, I took money from her purse to get home and then went back and we're engaged. Yeah, you should not tell her that. Don't do that.
No, that's something you keep to yourself. And at the very most, thank it. That's about as much as you should do.
Tweet it to this account so we could talk about it. But when my son was small, he had a habit of pooping in the bath. We'd use the little bucket from the kitchen to scoop it up, clean it in the dishwasher and back in the kitchen drawer. 10 years later, we still use it.
Oh, dear.
So the poop, but you got to have a designated poop bucket.
Is that the guy who didn't wash his hands after shitting?
That's probably. That's like when you find my family never had this, but my wife did. They had a puke bowl when you would get sick. You put it by the.
We had a puke bowl.
Yes, but you got to buy it and make it a weird color. So right. That's
mark
the
it somehow. Yeah.
God forbid you have a couple extra people over to the house. And you look over and somebody's eating out of the puke bowl.
Buddy.
Can you tell me, Nick, what has the Bob and Tom show done for you as a comedian?
Well, I'll be honest with you. You could probably combine all my Lettermans and all my Conans together. And I'm going to be really... open and say, I'm going to say 50 people have seen me on Letterman in my lifetime, have come up to me and gone, I saw you. I'm not counting about, you know, brothers and sisters or parents. I probably had 50 people in my life have said, I heard you or saw you on Letterman. And I've probably had 10 times that many say they heard me on Bob and Tom. Bob and Tom has put more people in the seats for me than anything. You know, it's something that I really feel, it's another thing I feel very grateful to be able to be on the show, and it actually suits me very well. As you were talking earlier about just writing jokes, you know, I write jokes, and to have a venue where you're going to get a bunch of people to hear them, it's just a huge blessing.
Yeah. And to put it in context, dear listener, if you don't know, Bob and Tom Show is a syndicated radio show out of where I live here in Indianapolis. So that's the context of people go on the show, and it's a 4-hour long show. So I think with as many appearances as you've done on top of you could be on the show for an hour or two, you really it was, you know, podcasting before podcasting where you get to actually know somebody along with their jokes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've done, and again, I think it was the first appearance that I did on Bob and Tom, because Bob and Tom was huge for years before I got there. And then I did one thing there, and they really liked me. I did one show there and they really liked me and brought me back a lot. And it was just, yeah, I just feel very lucky.
Mm-hmm. Is there stuff in your stand-up that you feel like with being 35 years in, 36 years in, and I don't know how you write, but I can tell you how I pick a topic and I try to approach it by making it funny. you have jokes about depression and darker topics. Is there something that you tried to tackle that you've not been able to make funny yet?
Jeez.
Because depression is heavy enough, but thankfully we all have it.
Depression was tough.
Where it's like so universal that it is a dark topic, but also people can relate to it, fortunately and unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't know that I'll be honest with you. I think being happy is a tough topic to, I guess that's a sort of a subset of being depressed, is trying to get happy. I've have a hard time sort of wrapping my head around. And after I shot this special, I, you know, started fresh with a new act, or am starting fresh with a new act. I certainly do not have a new act now, but probably got 10 minutes. And a lot of it's just about trying to get happy, and how do I get happy, and what are happy people all about, and that kind of thing. So That's something I'm still unwinding. Yeah.
What makes you happy?
Well, I mean, the stuff behind you makes me happy. I like horror stuff. I have, I'm subscribed to about 5 horror magazines.
Fangoria, like, probably is one of them, right?
Fangoria, Scream, Horror Hound, Rue Morgue, and there's one more I don't know. Oh, I think it's called The Dark Side.
Okay.
It's a British one that focuses mainly on older horror movies. But so when I come home after a week on the road and I see an envelope that's going to have a magazine in it, that makes me happy. I watched, about 2 years ago, I watched a movie called Antlers. That made me happy. That was like so good. I couldn't.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Happy about that. I thought Talk to Me was really good. I thought Last Voyage of the Demeter, the vampire in The Last Voyage of Demeter, was worth the entrance fee or the ticket.
Yeah.
And and I love doing stand up. I love going to the Comedy Cellar. I love doing it at the on the Bob and Tom Show, just telling my newest best joke. And that's about it, really.
Yeah. Well, how did you know you have the new special? How do you know when it's ready to be a special? Are you tired of the jokes and you're like, let's put these to bed?
Well, I tried to have my first special. I tried to have like 55 minutes, and you know, I've been talking to comics a lot over the last couple years, 3-4 years, and everyone's kind of cutting down in terms of how much time you really need to do, because a lot of it's people just don't watch. So when I got 45 minutes this time, I only did 45 minutes on that night, and then I cut it down to like 41, and I think I'm going to go shorter next time I do it, because I just don't think it's necessary. If somebody wants me to do an hour, sure, I could pull off an hour, but I don't think, I think having a great killer 30-minute video is amazing to have great 30 minutes, and there's no need to water it down. So that was my thinking.
I couldn't agree more. Where we live in a TikTok, Instagram, scroll, scroll, scroll. Like, even you ever find yourself watching a minute video and you're like, God damn, how long is this thing going to last?
So, yeah, I watched the little line moving and I go, I can't, I don't have time for this.
Yeah,
this
is... I don't have time. I got to keep scrolling to watch more shit that I won't watch.
Right.
Like, it's, I am in that same boat where I'm like half hour or less, because and I it's not like I have more important things to do. It's just my attention span. And if you can give me, like you said, a killer 30 as opposed to a killer 30 spread out over 60 minutes, just let's get to it, you know?
Yeah. And I also think that if you're not Dave Attell or Dave Chappelle or whoever else is really great, you know, doing a headline set in a club, I think 35 minutes is amazing. I just don't think people want to sit for 2.5 hours without staring at their phone. So when I hear of guys doing 2 hours or something, and or one, even an hour, I think, God, come on. These people just want to go home.
That doesn't sound fun. Two hours. No. I'm good. And I've seen, like, there are people that have broken world records. I'm like, that guy's my favorite comic. That sounds terrible.
Right, right. Know? Exactly. Like,
wrapping up here, Nick, you have your special. Where else and what else would you like to plug before we get out of here?
Well, you could just follow me on at Comic Nick Griffin on Instagram. Most of my information is there. And you can check my website at nickgriffin.net. And that's about it. Yeah, just watch the special. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, well, I want to thank you for taking the time to even be on the show, Nick, because you're a guy I've always loved listening to and a great joke writer who I look up to. So thanks for even being on the show, man.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Thanks, dude.